Carola Domar is being interviewed by Renee Garlick for Concord's Oral History Program. The interview is taking place at her home at 264 Heathsbridge Road on May 4, 1998. Mrs. Domar is 78 years old. Today you are a Concordian of 40 years in living in Canantum, but you began your life growing up in Germany, and you experienced and can give us an eyewitness account of what it was like to be a young girl at the time that the Nazis took over. So I'd like to go back to your days growing up in Germany.
I was born and raised in Frankfurt am Main, Germany. My father was a lawyer, and I was the youngest of three children. My brother, who was 21 months older than I, was brain damaged. My sister was 5 years older. There was never any money problem. We had so many servants that nobody in the household did anything. We had a cook and two servants and a cleaning woman who also did the laundry and the ironing. We had a gardener. We had a governess for about 2 years, and later a tutor who tutored my brother. For me, life was just wonderful. There were no obstacles. I became actually quite early involved in youth movements. I would think you probably call it the scout movement in this country, but in Germany it was something similar in scouts, but not exactly the same. This life went on until one day on January 30th, 1933, I came home from my piano lessons and had to walk past a large square in Frankfurt. And there was obviously something very exciting going on. People were talking and people were meeting at the square. The square was filled. And I asked what was going on, and I was told that Hitler had just been coming to power. That really scared me, because Hitler was discussed quite frequently, and I realized that once he comes to power, our life will change very rapidly. And so I remember walking home from this square to my house, crying the whole way home.
Bert, how old were you then?
I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
The first few weeks there was not any change, but on April 1st, 1933, that day was declared a day of boycott of Jews, which meant that all Jewish stores had to stay closed. No Jew was allowed to be on the street, and of course we children were not allowed to go to school that day. This was the first time that I was really singled out as a Jew. I was in a non-Jewish school at that time. I was very popular because I was very good in sports, which in Germany was important to be popular, and I was class president for many years. But this was a great shock to me. But it was more of a shock to my sister, who was 6 to 8 weeks before her final graduation from high school.
Oh my.
And she was so upset over this that she refused to return to school.
Mm-hmm.
So she never finished high school. And this is what we call the Abitur, which is really the, you have to pass an exam, and it is really a big, big step in your life. Because my sister did not want to stay in Germany, she then, very soon after April 1st, moved to France. She was 18 years old and lived alone in France for the rest of her life. My brother, who was, as I said, 21 months older than I, because he was brain damaged, was very soon after my sister left, also sent to France, because by that time it was known that Hitler exterminated handicapped people, and certainly the brain damage would make him a handicapped young man. Well, he was 14 and a half. So he was sent to a very special school in France. From there he was sent to a school later and to Italy, and eventually was exterminated in a camp there. As I said before, I was in a non-Jewish school where I was very popular, and from time to time I decided with some friends to go swimming. So we agreed to meet at the swimming pool at a certain time, and I arrived there and there was a big sign, "No Jews allowed." This repeated itself over and over again. We would decide to go to the movies, and I would arrive there and the same sign, "No Jews allowed."
What was your feelings, and what were the feelings of your non-Jewish friends?
My non-Jewish friends were scared to say anything, because Hitler was in power and you were not allowed to complain about anything. But they obviously felt for me, because, as I said, I was class president, and they continued having me as class president. But in some instances, they themselves did not go swimming or go to the movies. But occasionally, one or two would decide, as long as they were there already, to go ahead and go in. In May 1933, every class of that age would go for a week to the country where we had school. It's almost like a camp here. Where we had science and nature studies and things. And by that time, life in schools was quite militaristic. And that week up in the mountains, it was more so because we spent a whole week day and night together. And so we had to do a lot of marching and this. At that time, two of the girls complained that they did not want to have a Jew lead them, tell them what to do. But these two students were so aggressed against by the rest of the class that it was amazing for me to see that I still had so many friends in that class, that they would be willing to fight against these two girls who were obviously very strong Nazis. Now we have to remember by that time all boys and all girls of my age had to belong to the Hitler Youth, and therefore they really had to be very careful, because Hitler Youth both boys and girls were trained by their leaders to even tell on their own parents if their parents did anything against, said or did anything against Hitler. So these girls really took a chance protecting me, but nothing ever happened. This went on very smoothly.
And you were 14 by then?
This was still in 1933, okay. So I was still 13. But the following year, when I was 14, one Friday afternoon I was called in by my school principal, and she told me to pack all my things and not to return because they wanted the school to be free of Jews. Judenrein is the German word for it. This was a terrible shock for me. It just never occurred to me that I would not finish my schooling in this school. But there, of course, was nothing I could do. I was not allowed to tell my schoolmates about it. I had to wait in the principal's office until everybody had left and got my books, and I was told not at any time to talk to my friends or any classmates about being kicked out of school.
Now, clearly, you had known the principal from before.
Yes.
And what was her manner different now in talking to you?
Yes, very stiff. Obviously, she had been told by somebody that this is what she had to do. She did not say it in a very friendly tone. It was quite cold. But this was, for me, one of the hardest things at that time to realize that I was no longer going to the school.
Was she a friendly person before?
Certainly more friendly than she was mm-hmm. at that moment. I could feel that she was not very happy about having to tell me, but I could also feel that she was scared not to tell me this. This is one thing that of course happened, that everybody was threatened. If they did anything good for Jews, and this atmosphere went through our lives. At this time we still had the servants, but very soon after there was a decree that no non-Jewish servants were allowed to live in a Jewish home. And since some of the people were living with us, they had to be let go. And slowly, one after the other had to be let go, because by the time I was 15, no Jewish family was allowed to have anybody non-Jewish working for them within the house. So that took care of it. And I remember at that time, it was the first time in my life that I had to make my own bed. And to me that was rather difficult, because I just didn't know how to make my own bed, because it was always made. My great solace was my belonging to the youth movement, where we met weekly and
every... This is a Jewish group?
This was a Jewish group, yes. Mm-hmm. We met weekly, and every Sunday we would go out for hikes, either into the mountains or the forest. Not infrequently, we met with Nazi youth groups and occasionally had fistfights, I mean, actually fought. There was even sometimes our girls' troop against a boys' Nazi troop. We were never really badly hurt, but occasionally came home rather bruised and roughed up. This did not stop us from going out because we felt it was important for us to have our weekly outings. At the age of 12, I myself became a troop leader and had 7 and 8 year old girls in my troop. And at that time, I felt very scared to go out with them because I felt now responsible for these kids. And so whenever we went on an outing, I made sure that I went with at least one other troop of people my age, so that if anything happened, the younger kids could be protected.
And how were you identified as Jews? Did you have to wear a
star or something? Well, we wore our scout uniform, which was different from the Hitler Youth.
I see.
So it was obvious. Mm-hmm. Either you were Hitler Youth or you were Jewish.
Okay.
And I remember once on vacations, we always had camps. And I remember on one occasion, we were set up to go to a camp. All arrangements had been made. And when we got there, and these camps were usually for several troops together. And we got to the campsite, and again there was a big sign, no Jews allowed. So we didn't know what to do. You know, all the kids had said goodbye to their parents, and we were supposed to be gone for a week. It so happened that my parents were on vacation that week and had taken my brother and sister with them, and all our servants were giving a leave. That was when we still had servants. And so I suggested, let's all move into my house and have our camp there. This is what we did. We went out, we bought the groceries, we did the cooking, we did everything. And nobody would have known that we had done this, except when my parents came back and the servants came back. So much toilet paper was missing that they realized something was going on that was not expected. And so I had to admit that, yes, there were probably about 25 of us living in the house, and 25, for some reason we didn't think of buying toilet paper. But
well, they understood under the circumstances.
They did, but I was grounded for a few days.
Oh, okay.
So this went on until, after I was kicked out of the school, I was forced to go to the Jewish school, which I at that time absolutely refused. And so my parents sent me to Italy, where my brother was in school. Now, they did not tell me that I was supposed to go to that school. All they told me was that I was to visit my brother over Easter vacation, which I did. When it was time for me to go home, I was gotten a telephone call from my parents that they had decided they wanted me to stay in this school. I was absolutely horrified because even though I loved it there, this was done without my knowledge and I felt cheated. So I decided to run away and run back to Germany because to me, I was a German. My father was a German, my mother was a German, and we all thought that Hitler could not possibly last. But my parents were worried that I might get into trouble because of the fights I had been in and all. So they thought that this was a good way to get me out of Germany. So anyway, I decided I'm going to run away. That evening, the director of the school, who was a wonderful guy, called me, and we stood on the roof garden overlooking the small village in the Mediterranean on a beautiful evening, and the director said to me, I know you well enough to know that you are planning to run away. Have you ever thought what it would do to this school if they find out that one of their students ran away? this would ruin our school. So I made a compromise with him. I agreed to stay through this semester until June, and then he would see to it that my parents would let me come home. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed in that school for the semester, and it was the best schooling I ever had in Europe. Because while in the German school, I was taught to spit back what I was told. Mm-hmm. In other words, there was no independent thinking. In mm-hmm. fact, under Hitler, you were almost forbidden to think independently. While this school was really based on our figuring out things, it was a problem-solving experience rather than a rote memory experience. And I just thought this was great. But since I had made the decision to go home after the term, I did go back to Germany.
The Italian school, that wasn't a Jewish school?
No, it was a German school. Mm-hmm. It was a German school. Most of the children were Jewish, but it was not a Jewish
yeah.
school.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the difference of learning was so exciting
mm-hmm.
that there were only 7 kids in my class to start
mm-hmm.
with. And we were competing. And we were competing. I was the only girl, which of course made it more exciting for me. But it was just, I suddenly realized there was a different way of schooling. Anyway, I went back to Germany and had to go to the Jewish school now. I did this for about half a year and was so miserable that I quit school at the age of 15. I just decided I had no future as far as schooling was in Germany. By that time, it was obvious that Jews could not go to university. My father wanted me to be a lawyer. I knew no way could I study law in a German university. And remember, I refused to leave Germany. So I quit school. I just, from one day to the next, said I'm no longer going back to school. My parents were very unhappy because, of course, they wanted me to finish school. But there was nothing they could do. So I was sent to Berlin for a year to live with a family, be like a companion to the wife, because they had no children. They happened to have chickens, they had cats, and they lived in the country. So I spent the year there.
They were Jewish?
This was a Jewish family, yes.
Mm-hmm.
While I was there, or already before, I had heard of the idea of starting a special program for Jews to train young Jewish boys and girls in agriculture in order to have a trade to leave Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, all these training places were training people to go to Palestine. We were anti-Semitic. We were anti-Israel, anti-Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
That was stupid. But we were anti-Zionists, so no way were we going to go to Israel. However, the original plan was for this all the students in that place to go to Brazil. I wanted in the worst way to go to this place because many of my friends were there. It was the type of place that I really felt I could be very happy in, but my parents were very much against it because the daughter of a lawyer becoming a peasant, they could not stomach. So again, I was sent to France, where my sister lived, because she just had a baby, And so I was convinced that it would be good for me to take care of the baby so that my sister could continue working as a photographer. So I stayed there for 5 months, had a miserable time because I did not want to be in France. I wanted to be in this place which is called Grossbreezen. It's Grossbreezen. So I finally convinced my parents to let me come back to Germany, and finally they agreed to let me go to Grossbreezen. So in 1937, when I was 17 years old, I did go to Grossbreezen. It was not easy. I mean, here we had real heavy agriculture, often had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to milk the cows, take care of the horses, take care of the chickens, do a lot of housework. There were 130 students in this place, 100 boys and 30 girls. But we were an island, a Jewish island within Germany. We almost forgot that we were surrounded by Nazi Germany, because we had our own life, we had our own friends, we had our own teachers, and we worked very, very, very hard. We also studied some agriculture, like soil chemistry. We learned Portuguese because the plan was to go to Brazil, and we really became what my father always called the peasants. Then one day in October 1938, early October, I had a letter from my mother saying to me that because their anniversary was on November 11th, she would like me to surprise my father and please come back home. She sent me the money for the train trip. And then a few days later I had a letter from my father saying that he wanted me to surprise my mother, sending me the money for the train trip. I wrote both of them separately, "Sorry, I can't get off." And on November 8th, arrived, surprising both of them. This was the day before Kristallnacht. Of course, I didn't know that. The next day, in the late morning, we were all home. My uncle, my father's brother, was there too. The doorbell rang, and three SS men walked in. One of them identified himself by name, saying to my father that he lost a court case against my father, and started beating him up in front of us, really beating him up. And then they took him away. At that time, we did not know where. All him and my uncle, by the way. So my mother and I were left in the house, terribly, terribly upset, of course. Later that afternoon, these three SS men and two more came back to the house. We had to stand with our face against the wall, and they ransacked the house. They went through every drawer. They went through every book, through everything on the floor. They were looking for weapons which were illegal for Jews to have, and a communist material. They found the books written by Jews, but they did not find any communist material. However, at that time, my mother and I did not know whether we were going to get through this alive or not. They finally, after maybe an hour and a half or two, they walked out, leaving the house in shambles. That was, at that time, we realized we could no longer stay in Germany. But my mother found out fairly soon after that my father was in Buchenwalde, which is the concentration camp where he was. And because he had been an officer in World War I, and he had the Iron Cross, she sent the papers to that camp. About 3 or 4 days after my father was taken, we got a telephone call from my father's secretary at his lawyer's office, asking my mother to come to the office immediately. My mother was by that time so broken up, there was no way for her to do this. We didn't know why she was asked. So I agreed to go. So I went to my father's office, and the secretary took me into his room, opened a drawer, and there was a pistol. And she handed me the pistol, and she said, "You've got to get rid of this, because anybody, any Jew found with a pistol was immediately shot." So she gave me a paper bag, and there was no way down there that I could get rid of the pistol. So I walked from downtown to a place where a park, where there was a lake, with this pistol in my hand. And I don't know how I lived through this, because the fear was so great. I thought everybody who saw me must know that there's something wrong. But I just kept walking. I went to the park. I found a very secluded spot, and I dumped the pistol into the lake. I am a very lucky person. I have to say that over and over, that nothing worse happened to me, because I think I was in more danger this maybe hour than I had ever been before, because anybody could have stopped me and say, "What do you have in your hand? What's in that bag?" But I'm here to talk about it and tell you about it.
Now, you mentioned about papers arriving at Buchenwald,
yes.
That your father had received the Iron Cross.
Yes.
Were these papers sent in the hope that he could receive decent treatment?
No, it was really in the hope that he would be released.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he was.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people who were taken this Kristallnacht, and you know, every Jewish men 18 and over, they could get hold of, was taken that day or night and taken to concentration camp. But my father was released several weeks earlier than most other people, and we are quite sure it was on the basis of this. He came home. He was taken on November 9th. He came home on December 9th, 1938. And the first thing he said to me, "We have to leave Germany." And then he said, I will not leave until you go." He wanted me out. He did not want to leave me behind, because again, being worried that I might get into trouble. So I had to find a way to get out of Germany as fast as possible. I had friends in Holland, and I had friends in England. By that time, we had our quota number, and we knew that we would get our visa for America by May 1940. But this was 1939, and no way could we wait in Germany until May 1940. So I decided I was going to England if that came first, or I was going to Holland if I heard from Holland first. Fortunately, it was England that I heard from first, because the place I wanted to go to in Holland was later run over by the Nazis and everybody exterminated. So again, my luck, I'm here. So I went to England and I lived with a family. The wife was Swedish, quite old. I was a companion. The husband was out a good deal. The children did not live at home. So it was my duty to take care of this woman who was a vegetarian, which was very hard on me because I loved my meat. But then in early September 1939, this friend of mine and I decided we'll go off on a hitchhiking trip. Hitchhiking was something I had done all over Germany, loved doing, and it was an exciting way to see the country. So the family I stayed with, they were going away for a few days, so we decided this was a good chance for us. We had never seen Wales. We wanted to go to Wales. So we hitchhiked, and we were in the middle of nowhere when the person from whom we got a ride had turned on the radio, and it was announced that Poland was invaded and that most likely war was about to start, and that every enemy alien which we were had to stay within 5 miles to where they were registered. Here we were far, far from there. So we asked the driver to stop. We crossed the road. We hitchhiked back to where we lived. And she stayed with a different family. And because there was nobody in the home where I was scared, because one, of course, expected the Germans to bomb England immediately. I asked the family where my friend stayed, whether I could please stay with them. And they said no, I was too old to be chicken like that. And so I had to live for several days and nights alone in this house, never knowing whether there was going to be an air raid or not.
And so by this time you were 19?
I was 19, mm-hmm. Yes.
Still very frightening to
yes.
be alone.
So I finally decided I was going to move to London, which I did, and I took on a job as a maid, which for the daughter of a lawyer who was raised with servants around her was a very, very painful experience. But I knew I could not leave England until May, probably June 1940. I had to earn my living. And so I did take that job. It was a very difficult period. My parents were not there. My parents had gone to France, where my sister lived. I was alone in England, a foreign language, living with strangers. But I knew the end would come in sight, and indeed, the end of May, I got my visa, and on June 1st, I was on my boat, on the boat to America. I had had a ticket for first class on the Holland-America line, but at that time, Holland was invaded, and the ship I had a ticket on was sunk. So I was switched to the Cunard line, and by that time, of course, the war was going strong, and in fact, while we were at sea, France was invaded, and Italy ended the war. So this was a convoy, and several times during this trip, it lasted exactly 13 days, we were bombed, air raids, which meant we had to be with
life jackets underneath. We could hear the ag-ag of the anti-aircraft, but we never knew whether we were going to be hit or not. So we, instead of going to New York, this ship went to Montreal, because on the way back it was made into a troop ship, a Canadian troop ship. The ship on the way back was sunk and everybody was lost. Here again, my luck, I'm here.
That's incredible.
So I went from Montreal. We were all taken by bus to New York, where I had an uncle and aunt. By that time, a group from this agricultural training had come to America, because Brazil, even though originally agreeing to have us all, decided they did not want to have that many Jews. So we had to divide up, and the group went to Australia. Some people did go to Palestine, some people went to Argentina, and 36 of us ended up in Virginia on a farm that was given to us by a Jewish owner of a big department store. His name was Thalheimer. In fact, they talk now about the Thalheimer's list after the Schindler's list, because Mr. Thalheimer bought this farm and divided it into 30 parcels and gave each of the boys, there were 30 boys, 6 girls, gave each of the boys a piece of land, because as landowners they did not need a quota number. They could get their visa immediately. This is how he got these 30 young men out of Germany. It did not work for girls. It only boys were allowed to be landowners. I don't understand why. But the 6 of us had ways like I did. I had an uncle who gave me an affidavit. That's how I could come. But
an uncle in this country,
mm-hmm. In Milwaukee. Also had an uncle in New York, but I got the affidavit from an uncle who was a doctor in Milwaukee. So the 6 of the girls had come on their own, on our own. But the boys were really saved by this Mr. Thalheimer, otherwise they would have had no way to get out of Germany. So we lived in Virginia, about 60 miles from Richmond. It was a tobacco farm. We earned a dollar a week, $4 a month, worked very hard, but we were safe, we were free. While I was on the boat coming over to America, I was told that France was being invaded. My parents were in France at that time. In fact, my father was again interned in France as a German. I didn't know that at that time, but found out later. And my mother, who lived with my sister in Paris, had to flee Paris. My sister left first, and my mother left with a woman who had an apartment in the same building, who had had a stroke and therefore could not drive her car. My mother, who had never driven a car, drove that car out of Paris into Spain with a woman telling her exactly what to do. From time to time they were strafed by German attacks, had to get out of the car and climb under the car to save themselves, but they made it. When she arrived in this country, neither she or I had heard from my father. All we knew was by that time that he was in a camp, and nobody thought he would get out of this camp alive, because that part of France was invaded by the Nazis. But indeed, it so happened that when the Nazis invaded that camp, they opened the gates and said, "Sof keeper, save yourself if you can." And so they could just walk out. My father, who was almost 60 at that time, walked day after day until he got to the Spanish border. We had friends in Portugal. They sent him the money to go get from the Spanish border to Oporto, where he took the ship to America. So my parents and I were together. They moved to Richmond, which was the closest city. My father could not work as a lawyer anymore because at 60 he could not have started to go to law school, get a degree here. So he went to evening school and got a degree in accounting. While my mother, who had taken a course as a masseuse, was working as a masseuse. Now we have to remember that my mother, until about 1935-36, had never done any housework, nothing. We were taken care of by others. Here she was working hard as a masseuse. My father, who was a lawyer, went to evening school. But he took care of the house. He cleaned, he did the cooking. He was very proud of himself that he could do this, but it sure was a great change of life for them, I guess, as it was for all of us.
Your sister survived the war?
My sister survived. She had fled from Paris, kept going south, and ended up in a beautiful place in the French Alps, Megève. She was married, and the first child is the one I had taken care of in 36. Then she had another child in 39. And when she was pregnant with her third child, she was told that her husband was killed in the war. So when she came to Megève, she had two small children, was pregnant with the third, and no husband. As soon as she got to Megève, she got baptized so that she was not a Jew. She became a Catholic and was known as a Catholic. She could not have survived if she had stayed Jewish. She became a very good children's photographer and eventually remarried. And at some point or other, we had all three of her children living with us here because they all had great problems. Emotional problems for obvious reasons. My sister died 6 years ago, about 5.5 years ago, in a nursing home in Megève. She had Alzheimer's. My mother had Alzheimer's, and my grandmother had Alzheimer's. Of course, in those days it wasn't called Alzheimer's, but now know that this is what it is. After I realized that I did not want to live on a dollar a week, and I felt I really needed to help my parents financially, I moved to Washington and got a job as a nursemaid. The couple I worked for, taking care of the baby, kept telling me that this was ridiculous, that I would be a nursemaid, that I could do much better, but I didn't know where to turn. So they suggested that since my parents lived in Virginia, I should go to the Department of Education, to the vocational guidance in Richmond, which I did. They gave me 2 days of testing, and at the end said, "You're going to go to university." And I laughed. You know, I have no money. I have absolutely no money. They said, well, don't worry about that. We will pay for 4 years of your tuition. All you have to do is get yourself into a university and work for your room and board. Well, this was only in America.
Mm-hmm.
That have happened. So I didn't know anything about American universities, but I had heard about the University of Chicago. So I said, all right, I'll get myself into the University of Chicago. They said, oh no, when we say you can go to any university, we mean any university in the north, in the south, not in the north. I knew I did not want to be in the south.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked, how far north can I go
and
still be in the south? And they said Washington, D.C. So I ended up at George Washington University,
mm-hmm.
where I eventually met my husband, married, and had a wonderful 51 years of happy marriage.
Isn't that wonderful? You have talked about your experiences at different schools, and I think you mentioned that you actually were invited back to Germany
yes.
to speak. Could
yes.
you
yes.
tell me about that?
Frankfurt, the city where I grew up, had a nice plan. Each year they invited a group of young people who had grown up in Frankfurt, had to leave because they were Jewish. They paid all expenses, the travel, the hotel and everything, because they wanted us to know what Frankfurt was like now. And I was one of these invitees. And so in 1992, I went to Frankfurt. My husband absolutely refused to go with me. He did not want to have anything to do with Germany, even though he was not German, he was Russian. But I decided this was something I really wanted to do. And when I got there, I was asked whether I would be willing to talk to school groups about my experience growing up in Germany under Hitler as a Jew. And I felt it was my mission to do that indeed. And so I talked at several high schools, always great interest. People were really, really unhappy about what had happened. The guilt even in these kids came through. And they were especially nice, I felt. The hardest for me was when I was asked to talk at the school where I was kicked out of. At first I thought I could not do it. I just could not walk back into that school. And then I said to myself, I have to. I mean, this is absolutely necessary that these kids in that school, they were so proud of that school, knew what had happened several years before that. So I did go in, tears streaming as I walked in. It looked different. It used to be an all-girls school. Now it was co-educational. Boys in blue jeans, girls in blue jeans. I was horrified. All this would have been unthinkable when I went to school there. But I did give my talk. And in this school, as well as several of the others I talked, there were children sitting, they were all high school students, in front of me crying.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions they asked were really deep, sensitive questions. But it certainly was very difficult. After I talked at that school, which was the last day before I left, I had to wait for the last day, and then also walked from my school to the house where I had grown up and walked into the house. I couldn't have done it earlier. I was just
mm-hmm.
emotionally not ready. But this, I'm glad I did it. I am very glad I did it. Also, there is now a Jewish museum in Frankfurt. I did that tour the last day. But what I found striking, as a guest of the mayor, we all had to wear our name tags. And with the name tags, it said, guest of the mayor of Frankfurt. So many, many times I was stopped on the street by strangers. How come you are a guest of the mayor? And each time I explained that I'm Jewish, I grew up in Frankfurt, and the mayor had is inviting every year a group of Jews to come back and see Frankfurt now. I expected several times that people would turn away from me. Nobody did. The questions were remarkable. The sensitivity was remarkable. I really, really was surprised how well I was received. I really did not expect that.
That was really worth the coming back. It was like a resolution.
Yes, yes.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing these memories. You have recently shared it with Steven Spielberg.
A week ago today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The producer of Schindler's List.
That's right, that's right. He had given $30 million for this project, money that he had earned from Schindler's List. And he interviews, I thought it was just in this country, but they told me, no, it was international. Interviewed people internationally about the experiences growing up in Germany, living in Germany.
When you had mentioned Kristallnacht, that was the night that all the Jewish-owned stores were shattered. That must have been terrifying.
When they came for my father, we didn't know it yet. Mm-hmm. My father was on the Jewish Council of Frankfurt, and it seems they came to the Jewish Council first to get to take them away. So when they came for my father, we had no idea what was going on. We thought it was just because of this man who had lost court case against my father, that he got some friends together and said, let's beat up this guy and take him. That's what we thought. But later, of course, we found out that this was nationwide, what was going on in Frankfurt, not only in our house, but everybody. And we soon were told that all men 18 and over were taken. Then there were rumors that they would take girls too. And so whenever I went out, and I went out with my bicycle, I did not want to take public transportation. But whenever I went out, I had my toothbrush with me and things that I felt I needed, because I never knew whether I was going to be picked up by somebody.
Were you wearing the
This was before the star.
Before the star.
The only thing we had to, our names were changed. Every woman's middle name became Sarah, and every man's middle name became Israel. Mm-hmm. So I was then, you know, if I were asked for my name, I would have had to say Corolla Sarah Rosenthal, which would have identified me as a Jew. I never was stopped, but you never knew.
Well, these are extraordinary memories, and I'm most appreciative that you've opened up that window to the past, and you're the first Concordian that we have,
right,
who has lived through that time period.
Well, I feel very strongly that when my generation is 6 feet under, it'll be gone.
Mm.
And if we do not share with everybody what we experienced, it'll be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is too valuable a thing to share with others. And all I can say is that my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, whatever, will never have to experience what I experienced.
Thank you.